From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our opening hour, San Francisco is cracking down on tenants and homeowners who use Airbnb to rent out housing, at the same time that a pending investment deal has valued the startup at around $10 billion. The city banned short-term rentals and is reportedly investigating 85 people who are offering spaces through Airbnb and similar online sites. Airbnb announced last week it would start collecting San Francisco's 14% hotel tax, saying it wants to play by the rules and help generate more revenue for the city. We'll take all of that up and more next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. San Francisco banned short rentals, and those renting out space on Airbnb and other markets for short-term rentals face fines by the city planning department and eviction on grounds of operating a hotel. There appears presently to be a crackdown on Airbnb rentals, and we want in this forum hour to assess if and why that is the case in this high-cost rental market and what it means not only here in San Francisco but in other cities. Airbnb is now worth about $10 billion as the crow flies, and we have Nick Pappas with us, who's a spokesperson for them. He's with us actually from D.C. this morning. Welcome, Nick Pappas.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Glad to have you. I also want to tell you who else is with us. Edward Singer is here in studio. He's a real estate attorney with the law firm Zacks & Friedman and a real estate broker. Represents the landlord who filed an eviction notice against a tenant using Airbnb. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for inviting me.
Glad to have you here. Also glad to have Joe Toberner, who is managing partner at Toberner Law Center. He's a tenant's right lawyer who represents people facing eviction for Airbnb use. Welcome, Joe Toberner.
Thank you.
Also, Justin True is here with us in studio, legislative aide to San Francisco Supervisor David Chu. He's been working on legislation the past year regarding short-term rentals in the city. Justin True, welcome.
Glad to be here.
And to round things out here, Scott Sanchez is with us, zoning administrator for the San Francisco Planning Department, who enforces the planning code for housing units. And good to have you, Scott Sanchez.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin with Nick Pappas, and let's talk about Airbnb. There is a crackdown or there isn't a crackdown? Let's go to that first of all, from your perspective.
Well, you know, we have seen some reports that you've mentioned here, and we're obviously disappointed about that, and we're disappointed because those actions are really hurting regular people who are struggling to make ends meet in a very expensive city. There are people like Reed and Deborah Eller who are senior citizens who have lived in San Francisco for decades and just want to occasionally share the home in which they live with people who want to visit one of the greatest cities in the world. So we're disappointed because we know the overwhelming majority of the people who use Airbnb in San Francisco are sharing the home in which they live. They're doing it on occasional basis when they, you know, travel out of town for vacation or maybe they're out of town for a work trip and they want to share their home and the city that they love. And we're incredibly proud that people have used Airbnb to help pay their bills. We hear countless stories of people who have been saved from eviction, have been saved from foreclosure because they've been able and have been able to stay in San Francisco because of Airbnb. So we're disappointed that there are actions that are taking place that are making San Francisco more expensive for more families.
Although I think you'd have to concede that some are abusing probably, and the city is saying it's illegal for them to do pretty much what you've outlined here, against the law.
Well, I think the real solution, and this is really a question about, you know, how we're spending our time and energy, and I think that the real solution here are clear, fair, progressive laws that let people share the home in which they live with travelers from around the world. And that's where we should be dedicating the vast majority, you know, of our time and our energy. We shouldn't be spending our precious time and our precious resources going after senior citizens like Reed and Deborah and other people who are just trying to make ends meet and stay in an incredibly expensive city.
What about Airbnb's role in this? I mean, can you actually go to the website and can you find the sort of thing disclosed in terms of violating the law and the consequences or possible consequences?
All people who use Airbnb to share their space to follow their local rules and regulations. We have a special section on our website that is dedicated to providing people information about the rules and regulations in San Francisco and a number of other cities around the world, and we're adding cities to that as quickly as we can. It's very difficult. The laws in San Francisco, the laws that govern this activity in the 35,000 cities around the world where we have operations, are incredibly complex. They are incredibly arcane, and they were not drafted to cover people who are occasionally renting out their spare bedroom or their home when they go on vacation. They were drafted for hotels. So what we really need are some clear, fair laws that are progressive, that move us forward, that let people share the home in which they live. And we want to keep working towards those.
Well, you're going to be paying the city taxes, it looks like, about 14%. That will help move investment forward. At what I mentioned before is a valuation of about $10 billion. That puts you ahead, I think, of Hilton Hotels. At this point, I would simply ask if this is likely to happen throughout the country. It's happened up in Portland. It's happening here in San Francisco. Sharing city initiative is what we're talking about here. You're going to be paying your fair share.
We strongly believe that our community, and our community strongly believes, and wants to pay their fair share to the cities where that they know and love. You know, we looked at this issue. We are a young company, and we took a good hard look at this issue and the various policies in place. And we talked to the people who make up the Airbnb community, the hundreds of thousands of hosts and guests who really power this. And they made it clear that they want to pay their fair share. So we're proud to be moving forward with this in San Francisco. We're proud to be moving forward with it in Portland. We would like to do something similar in New York. Interestingly enough, the laws in New York actually prohibit us from collecting and remitting taxes on behalf of our hosts, and we estimate that that means New York is leaving about $21 million on the table.
Yeah, but New York
but
is different in terms...
We're piloting this in San Francisco. We're piloting this in Portland. We're going to move forward on this, take the lessons that we learn, and then see the best way to move forward in other communities.
Yeah, I was just going to say New York is different in terms of the actionable law. It's 29 days or less and only as a secondary offense, to my understanding. But how come it took so long for you to pay these taxes?
Well, we took a, you know, these are incredibly difficult and complicated issues. The exemptions that are in place, the tax rules in different communities, you know, sometimes the rules that govern this activity are different from city to city. They're different from block to block. And we are a young company who wanted to make sure we did our due diligence. We wanted to understand the laws. We wanted to understand what our community felt. But we're proud to be moving forward now.
Nick Pappas, again, spokesperson for Airbnb, joined us from the nation's capital this morning. And again, thank you for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Joe Taberner is here in studio. He's managing partner at Taberner Law Center, and he's a tenants' rights lawyer who represents people facing eviction for Airbnb use. In fact, one of these cases has received quite a bit of attention, special ed teacher by the name of Katz. Jeffrey Katz came in and suddenly found out 72 hours had to get out and said, you know, I felt like I was being evicted as some kind of a drug lord or something along those lines.
Yeah, we're seeing hundreds of evictions in the city for use on Airbnb. Currently, it is a crime to rent out on Airbnb in San Francisco. And so landlords are going online, finding out who's renting on Airbnb, and issuing eviction notices to tenants all over the city. I wouldn't say it's thousands of tenants, but it's definitely hundreds of tenants.
Didn't you actually go through the application process and do the Airbnb and say, I mean, just essentially find out how much they disclose about possible consequences?
Yeah, yesterday I went online and went through the application process and listed my own home on Airbnb. I delisted it right away, obviously, but there are links at the bottom of the page that several links, and one of the links is local law, and you click on it and it just says, you know, host, you're responsible for following the local law and you need to look into it. I didn't see anywhere where it told me that it was illegal in San Francisco to rent out an Airbnb. And in fact, the listeners should know that it is illegal in buildings with four or more units. It's a crime, a misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in prison for renting out on Airbnb in San Francisco.
You're also saying, along with Ted Gullickson and some of the people from the tenants union, that landlords are using Airbnb illegally.
Right. So we're seeing, and that's probably the biggest issue for affordable housing advocates. There are about 14,000 listings in San Francisco for short-term use. That's not just Airbnb. That's VRBO. That's corporate rental companies. And it's also universities. San Francisco State University and UCSF are also doing short-term rentals. So our studies, our initial studies, are estimating that there's 14,000 listings, and we think about half of those are units that are being rented out full-time and being taken out from our housing stock.
But you're also saying they're not getting citations, or at least certainly the landlords are not getting citations like the tenants.
Right. So the city, the local ordinance that is currently operative requires the city to issue a citation against the landlord before the San Francisco Tenants Union and other nonprofits can sue the landlord and realize a $1,000 per day penalty against the landlord for renting out on Airbnb. And
excuse me, if they're going to sue, it's high cost too.
Well, it's high cost, and the ordinance currently caps an attorney's right to recover fees. So the ordinance is not the first problem is that the city is not issuing the citations that we need to pursue these landlords. The San Francisco Tenants Union has compiled a list of about 250 landlords that are renting out multiple units on Airbnb in violation of the local ordinance. And we're trying to work with the city to get the city to issue the necessary citations so that we can pursue those landlords. And we hope that the city does that in the ensuing weeks.
Joe Taberner, again, is a managing partner at Taberner Law Center. He's a tenants' rights lawyer, represents people facing eviction for Airbnb use. And Edward C. Singer, Jr., real estate attorney with the law firm Zaxson Friedman, a real estate broker, represents a landlord who filed an eviction notice against tenant using Airbnb. That's the one I mentioned, the special ed teacher, Jeffrey Katz. Airbnb kind of becomes like a black market in this, doesn't it, Ed Singer?
Yes, it does. We operate under a rent ordinance, which limits the prices that landlords can charge their tenants. And the heated up market, or the pent up desire for both for home ownership and for tourists moving to San Francisco, creates a black market, which is illegal. But that's kind of the typical result of suppressing prices artificially.
You kind of like the idea, though. You just feel it doesn't work here in San Francisco. I mean, it becomes the old price fixed model.
That's correct. I mean, from a philosophical point of view, I see the benefits of the shared economy. I mean, I view the power of the internet to bring sellers and buyers together to perfectly price things, to have perfect information is probably where the future should go. I use as an example where we've come with purchasing cars. Back in the old days, you would go into a car dealership and be lied to about what deal was available to you, and you would probably pay more than you really needed to. Today, you can go online and you can shop around online and get a sense of what cars are really selling for, and you can bargain a good deal for yourself. Now, the evolution of that is you don't even have to own a car. You can now perfectly price a fractional ownership in a car, and I think that benefits society by making allocating scarce resources in the most efficient way. That's my philosophical point of view.
Well, philosophically, you can think about these analogies to Uber and things like that, but housing and transportation are kind of in a class by themselves, really.
Yeah, I agree. These cases have come to me in a different manner of forms. The first case actually came to me in 2011, so I'm not sure why this has suddenly become interesting in the press. I've been doing this for quite some time. But back in 2011, I got complaints of somebody who was people were coming in and out of an apartment with suitcases at all hours of the night. It was discovered that there was a lockbox installed on the outside of the building. And only then did we look at Airbnb and discover that this person was running it on Airbnb. And we prosecuted a case against that person, and the person no longer lives there.
Well, we're going to talk with Scott Sanchez and find out how many of these things come from complaints and that sort of thing. But are we really talking here about rent control? Isn't that the underlying many elephants in the room here?
Well, yes, I have a philosophical opposition to rent control. I believe that rent control is sort of a blind and conscienceless law. I mean, if we are here to talk about housing policy, rent control does nothing for that conversation. Rent control does not address how we can help our firefighters and teachers who provide services to our community or muni bus drivers. It doesn't help them live in this society. It simply blindly favors those who came before over those who want to come now. If we want to have a conversation about, home ownership. I mean, home ownership is a huge issue here in San Francisco, and we don't talk about what the benefits of that might be, but instead we lock up approximately 165,000 units in this rent-controlled, antiquated 1979 law and don't talk about what is the right balance between rentals and home ownership.
Again, Edward Singer is real estate attorney with Zaxson Friedman. I want to bring Scott Sanchez into this. He's zoning administrator with the San Francisco Planning Department and enforces the planning code for housing units. We're talking about a crackdown here and citations not necessarily given to certain folks as opposed to other folks. And let me just cut right to the chase here. Are most of these complaints being followed largely because of complaints from neighbors or other tenants?
Yes, entirely. And I would really challenge the notion that this is a crackdown on the part of the city. As been noted, this is an ongoing problem for many years in the city with units being taken off the rental market and used as short-term rentals. We have a small but very hardworking code enforcement team in the planning department, and with more than 1,000 active cases, of those, approximately 85 are related to these short-term rentals currently, and all of these are the result of complaints. We're completely complaint-based. So these are complaints from other neighbors, could be other tenants in the building, and we have seen an increase in the number of complaints over the past year or two. I would say that that's due in part to we've seen an increase in the number of listings that are available on these websites. Also, I think that articles that we've seen in the press have also highlighted this as a code compliance issue, and so people are aware that this is, in fact, illegal, and they are contacting our department with these complaints.
Yeah, but you hear a lot of complaints that people aren't necessarily aware. Maybe you need something more clear and enforceable. I mean, certainly there's been a lot of complaining about, I think we've intimated this so far in this discussion, about Airbnb not necessarily spelling things out or disclosing as much as they could. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, you know, definitely I'm all in favor of having a planning code that's clear and understandable for our for all, and better ways of getting that news out to the public. You know, certainly if Airbnb and other platforms like Airbnb were to make this information available to the public, that they need to seek proper approval from local jurisdictions, then that would be very helpful not only to San Francisco but to other cities that do business with Airbnb.
Well, there's also a perception that landlords want people out so they can pretty much raise the rents and not have to worry about having to follow that 1979 law, as Edward Singer called it.
You know, I mean, I think that's probably a fair argument, honestly. You know, in the case with Mr. Katz, it's my understanding that that was not the result of any city enforcement action. That was the landlord taking action because they had information that they were violating the law. Certainly, it's not our goal to see people evicted from units. Our goal is to preserve the housing stock, and evictions do nothing to further protection of the housing stock. In fact, you know, that's quite the opposite. So, you know, we have a very, I would say, very flexible enforcement system, and we try to compel compliance. We're not out there to issue penalties right and left. We would like to see people come into compliance, and so we have many options and opportunities for that to happen. So evictions is not the goal of our enforcement.
Scott Sanchez, again, is zoning administrator with the San Francisco Planning Department, and he enforces the planning code for housing units. Justin True is a legislative aide to San Francisco Supervisor David Chu, who's been working on legislation the past year regarding these short-term rentals in the city. And Justin, this is going to be coming to pass here. What are we talking about in terms of what Supervisor Chu has in the works here?
Yeah, I think the discussion so far illustrates perfectly why we need to legislate in this area. Right now, we're looking at a law that prohibits short-term rentals for under 30 days for units for buildings of 4 units or more, and it's clearly not working. The enforcement is complaint-driven. It's causing all sorts of unintended consequences around evictions, as we talked about. And it's very important to remember, and we've talked about this a little bit, but this is all happening in the context of the affordability crisis that is facing San Francisco right now, with the price of housing for people who are moving here and people getting displaced just going through the roof, so to speak. And I think that Scott Sanchez touched on exactly our underlying priority has to be to protect our rental housing stock right now, given the incredible pressures on it and the fact that we haven't been able to build enough housing in recent years to match the job growth that we've seen in San Francisco. So right now we're working on legislation in Supervisor Chu's office that we expect to come forward in the next couple of weeks after, like you said, about a year of work that really is going to try to create a regulatory framework around short-term rentals that makes sense for San Francisco and where we are right now. And we know this is going to be a complicated discussion, and there are a lot of stakeholders that we've been working with, but we know it's also going to be very important. And I can touch on a few of the points.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, maybe premature to have you preview this for us, but what can you tell us?
It has been legislation that's been in the works for a little while, so while we're still working on a lot of the details, some of the general principles I think are getting close. I think permanent residency is really, really important. For a short-term rental to be legal, it should have to be a permanent residence for someone, and that's really a core concept. I think we also think a cap on the number of days annually that a short-term rental could be let is is crucial, because if it's truly, as the gentleman earlier from Airbnb said, a case of, you know, when you're on vacation or to supplement income a little bit, then really it should not be a unit that has permanently become a quote-unquote Airbnb unit. That's really not serving San Franciscans. I do also want to say that Airbnb talking about recently about paying their occupancy taxes has been a prerequisite for us moving forward on legislation. And Supervisor Chu, when this issue came up a couple years ago, has been emphatic that companies that do short-term rentals should be paying occupancy taxes. The people who are staying in them do have an impact on the city, and they should be paying those taxes.
So that 14% will help move this legislation, as far as you're concerned, or will help make things more amenable.
It was hard to have a real conversation about what we should do legislatively with that issue hanging out there.
Yeah. So what is it going to look like? The regulatory framework.
Right. I think we're looking at, again, requirement for permanent residency and a cap on the number of days. We're also looking at a registration system for people who do want to be hosts or to put short-term rentals out on the market. But I think that there are a lot of details to work out. Some of these issues with tenants and landlords are complex, and we don't get in between a landlord, a tenant, and a tenant vis-a-vis their lease, although there may be some tenant protections that we can put in. But really, it's going to be a conversation that lasts a number of months. Once we propose legislation, it will go to the Planning Commission. So Scott Sanchez and his team, who we have been talking to, will take a look. The Department of Building Inspection also plays a role. Right now, you have classic case with the city where two departments are involved, Planning Department and the Department of Building Inspection, because there are different aspects of the code that are touched. So we want that to be one enforcement agency. And enforcement will be a part of the discussion moving forward, because when you have the city's housing stock being taken off the market to become short-term rentals, you have an enforcement issue, and it shouldn't merely be complaint-driven.
Well, there's a good deal of devil in the details here. I'm just thinking about people who thought that they were not necessarily subject to eviction or were not aware of that, and saying they're not scofflaws. I mean, what about Airbnb's responsibility here? Should they be disclosing possible consequences with eviction, or defending the tenants, or doing something along those lines?
Right. As has been discussed, Airbnb isn't the only actor here, but they have grown so fast.
Groups like Airbnb.
I think, you know, we think that disclosure is important. Clearly, there's a knowledge gap out there for tenants, and to some extent potentially landlords as well, who are doing this and don't understand the complexities of the city code. So we see that as a important part of the conversation going forward. They've started that disclosure, but it could go further.
Well, another important part of this conversation, of course, is to invite you, our listeners, to join us in conversation. And if you have something you'd like to contribute here this morning to the conversation, if you'd like to join us now, you can do so. We welcome your calls. Toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can join us now at that number if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation, or if you have questions or comments. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments or thoughts you might have onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Spoke earlier with Nick Pappas, who is the spokesperson for Airbnb. We're continuing our discussion here with Judson True, who's a legislative aide to San Francisco Supervisor David Chu, and with in studio also with us Edward Singer, a real estate attorney with the law firm of Zacks and Friedman, and a real estate broker who represents a landlord who filed an eviction notice against a tenant using Airbnb, and also Joe Taberner, who is a managing partner at Taberner Law Center and a tenants' rights lawyer, represents people facing eviction for Airbnb use. We also have Scott Sanchez on the line with us, zoning administrator for the San Francisco Planning Department, who enforces the planning code for housing units. And when we return, we'll hear from you, our listeners. You're listening to Forum on KQED. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco is allegedly cracking down on tenants and homeowners who use Airbnb to rent out housing. At the same time, that a pending investment deal has valued that startup at around $10 billion, and the city banned short-term rentals and is reportedly investigating 85 people who are offering spaces through Airbnb and similar online sites. Airbnb announced last week it would start collecting San Francisco's 14% hotel tax, saying it wants to play by the rules and help generate more revenue for the city. And we heard from Airbnb spokesperson Nick Pappas. We have a whole panel assembled here talking about this issue and talking about it online with us. Let me just read some comments from our listeners on Facebook. Colum says, hotels have to pay this tax. Hotels provide employment for a wide range of people, whereas Airbnb doesn't at all. San Francisco is leveling the playing field as it should be. Stephanie writes, the issue is renters illegally subletting without landlord or owner approval, compromising the safety of all in the building and avoiding the hotel taxes and fees paid by legitimate hotels. Beth writes, for a city that prides itself on being so dang progressive, San Francisco sure is big government and anti-freedom. And Angela says, pure greed, San Francisco. Let me read a few more comments here. Scott writes, this story reminds me of Uber, where technology and the marketplace are ahead of an antiquated system and laws that were designed to protect immigrants from slumlords. Jamie says, Airbnb is very disingenuous. It's smart that they used an elderly couple as their poster child, but the reality is renters do not own the properties they live in and therefore not theirs to sublease. End of story. It's not incredibly complicated, as their spokesperson says. A landlord from Berkeley writes, the arcane zoning laws favor new construction over the sharing economy. It's way more green to carve out in-law units than to build another high-rise. And Mark says, what about the landlords that upon a vacancy decide to not rent the unit and use Airbnb to rent the unit? Shouldn't this also be illegal? Well, we hear from, I think Edward Singer and Joe Taberner want to join in here. Joe, go ahead.
Well, I don't disagree with the writers that are saying subleasing is illegal, but these aren't subleasing evictions. Subleasing evictions require the landlord attorney to give an opportunity to cure. So
that's in the law, too.
Yeah. In every one of my cases, these tenants have stopped doing Airbnb as soon as they found out it was illegal, as soon as they received the notice. What these eviction notices are saying is you don't have an opportunity to cure. You're committing a crime similar to running a prostitution house.
Or crystal meth. Or
yeah,
making.
Right, exactly. And you don't have an opportunity to cure. Here's a perfect example. Young couple, this case is pending. Young couple moves here from the East Coast in 2013. They rent out on Airbnb for two nights with the property manager's permission in July of 2013. A new owner buys the building recently, an LLC. They go online. The owner goes online, finds out that my clients rented out on Airbnb this one time and says, you've committed a crime. Get out. It's not that those cases aren't winnable, because clearly the landlord has an ulterior motive, and you can't have an ulterior motive in San Francisco when you evict. But it's really expensive to defend these evictions. It'll cost these clients tens of thousands of dollars to defend this eviction.
Edward Singer, you went in here, I'm sure.
Yeah, sure. First off, outside of the context of San Francisco, unlawful subletting is recognized in the law as an uncurable offense. And people outside of San Francisco, landlords, are allowed to bring a straight eviction based on subletting, because it's been long recognized that that is one of the things that shows that a tenant is not respecting the obligations of the contract. What I hear Mr. Taubner saying, and I understand that David Chu is also trying to pass some legislation, is they want to pass what's called, I call, the one free crime rule. And that basically says you get to do this until you get caught, and then you get warned, and then you have to stop. And if it's our community's goal to stop these unlawful sublettings or Airbnb rentals today and going forward, then adopting a public position that allows people one free shot at it is not going to accomplish that. And to the extent that my clients want to stop this now and going forward, I support their position to serve a non-curable notice for an illegal use. And that's going to tell future tenants that you don't get to do this until you get caught. There's also another issue just on the timing of this three-day notice. That works when you have kind of a traditional subletting. But when you're only subletting for a weekend and then you find out about it, how do you ever really stop that? And that's not an exercise in imagination. In my experience, I encounter this all the time with like a dog. You know, a tenant will bring in a dog. It's a violation of the lease. Serve a three-day notice. The dog vanishes. And then a week later, the dog comes back. And you get into this game of, you know, serve the notice. They cure. Then they reoffend. I think it's perfectly appropriate to say, you get caught. This is a crime. You're out.
Well, we're going to hear from our callers in just a moment. I want to read a couple more online comments. So one listener writes, this has been happening for decades on places like Craigslist, newspapers, word of mouth, etc. It's despicable that some loser politicians and activists are grandstanding to catch headlines against evil techies to the detriment of renters who are barely making ends meet. Another listener, T.H. Lucy, writes, how do you know you're in yet another tech-fueled financial bubble that is about to burst like an overblown birthday balloon when Airbnb, which owns no property, has virtually no obligations to contractors, has never had to negotiate a strike with union employees, assumes virtually no liability, and doesn't have a single staff member who understands how to handle an influx of conventioneers is valued several billion more than the Sheraton. Let me read another note by Colin, and Scott Sanchez, I'd like to hear your response to this. He writes, isn't it a waste of resources for San Francisco's planning department to pay its employees to troll websites like Airbnb and VRBO to search for homeowners who might be renting a spare room in their homes, allegedly in violation of a 100-year-old ordinance that has no relevance to the present day? Maybe Forum should do a show on whether San Francisco has too many city employees whose contribution to the public good is marginal at best.
Okay, well, first, we do not troll websites looking for cases. Again, these are cases that are referred to us by people who live in these buildings, maybe multi-unit buildings, and they have concerns about safety, about just the livability of the units. The people that may be occupying the units as short-term rentals may be loud or disruptive. You know, there's no real guarantee about who may have access or accountability for those who access the units. And also, of the 85 cases that we have right now, you know, again, it's not as if we're seeing real signs of the sharing economy where people are renting out couches and rooms. Those aren't the cases that we're seeing, that we're investigating. We're seeing units that are entirely off the rental market. So a lot of the cases are actually not those that are rented out by tenants seeking to make ends meet. They are units that are rented out by landlords, by property managers, and they're entirely dedicated to a short-term rental use. To basically, they're operating as hotels. And our concern is that in the housing crisis, we are having many units, and I think it's been said hundreds of units, possibly thousands of units, that are taken completely off the rental market and being dedicated to this tourist hotel use. On top of that, we're not sure about how safe they may be operating in terms of meeting relevant building code requirements, and they're not paying the appropriate taxes.
Well, let me bring our callers on this. Before we do, though, Justin True, the word cure is used a lot. I think we've got the cure here from Supervisor True.
I think that once we introduce legislation and it goes through the public process and gets input from, you know, folks who are here in this conversation, maybe some of the folks who've been emailing you, I think we'll come up with a regulatory structure that preserves San Francisco's existing housing stock, but does allow, in limited circumstances, some short-term rentals that make sense. In 2012, Supervisor Chu passed an ordinance to get at corporate hotelization. And what that ordinance essentially did is stop corporations from, say, signing a one-year lease, but then renting, sort of having their employees stay for less than 30 days. So that was a first step. The housing crisis has only intensified the need to come up with a regulatory structure for these short-term rentals now. And I think we're getting close to the end of the beginning and the beginning of the legislative process.
Let's go to our callers. We go first to you, Linda. Hi, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Linda. I live in the Mission in San Francisco. I live in a 3-unit house. The bottom unit is being Airbnb'd by a tenant. I understand now that the middle unit will also be Airbnb'd by the landlord. I have a 3-year-old son who used to be able to play in the backyard, but now there are all manner of people traipsing in and out of this building. I have no guarantee of his safety. I've come home into the backyard to find strangers in my backyard who are Airbnb guests. I understand that Airbnb has a policy to guarantee people's belongings, but who is responsible for my safety? Because I'll tell you what, if anything happens to me or my kid, I will go after the landlord, but I will also go after Airbnb.
Well, we don't have the Airbnb spokesman with us anymore, but Joe Tiberner, you hear these kind of cases and makes you wonder about the necessity for regulation or more regulation, doesn't it?
This is a really common complaint that we're hearing. It's the nuisance of tourists coming and going. That's not only tenants and buildings, but that's neighbors. That's entire communities or districts that don't want transient use of their neighborhoods. They want the neighborhoods reserved for permanent housing for teachers and, you know, police officers and artists and musicians. But in terms of this client's particular issue, unfortunately, because the law makes Airbnb illegal in buildings with only four or more units, Airbnb is legal in her building, but she has recourse against the landlord for causing a nuisance. And I encourage her to reach out to a tenant rights attorney. This is a really common problem. We're addressing it on a daily basis to tell the landlord, look, you're breaching my covenant of quiet enjoyment, my peaceful possession of the property, and I'm going to come after you if you don't stop doing this.
And what are we going to do, Judson?
Yeah, there is still an issue.
You need a prophylactic against
zoning.
This.
There's a zoning issue.
Yeah, right now there are two problems with short-term rentals in San Francisco. One is if they're under 30 days, and the second one is really the planning code issue, which is essentially that there's a commercial use in a residential area. And so there are two ways to go at it, and there is actually a planning complaint to be filed here and follow-up from the department. Again, as Scott Sanchez mentioned, they have limited resources right now. I believe they may have two or three code enforcement officers. So, and the number of units is something that's under discussion, even for a regulatory regime for short-term rentals, is four the right number? So, I think that there is a fair amount of consensus from the conversations we've had that the situation that Linda described in her three-unit building in the Mission is not acceptable. It's bad for San Francisco right now as we face this housing crisis. It's obviously bad for her and her family, and it's something that we need to do something about.
Let me get another caller. Jerry, that's you. Hi, you're on.
Hi, thanks. I've been doing Airbnb for about 15 months now, and I'm a single parent. Before I was on Airbnb, I was collecting welfare, so I was on food stamps and also receiving child care through the state. Since I've been on it, I'm now off of food stamps. I'm now able to watch my son and instead of have someone else watch him. I'm getting ready to go back to school.
Well, it sounds like you pulled your life together. Congratulations. But where does Airbnb fit into this picture?
So it's allowed me to be able to afford to live in the city, it's helping me out with my rent. So, whereas before I'd have to work more hours and all different sorts of hours, and which meant that when my son got out of school, he'd have to go to the babysitters, which obviously I can't afford at a low-paying job unless I'm in college, and I can't go to college unless to make more money. Unless I can balance things out. So Airbnb has helped me.
Well, they've helped you with affordability, and I'm glad that's the case, and I thank you for the call. I'm actually just going to get another caller on here who you're hearing a lot of criticism more about Airbnb. This is Steve up in Sacramento. Steve, you're on.
Hi. I just want to make two points. Let's first start with the lie that's at the core of this. No one is sharing their apartment on Airbnb. They're renting it. This isn't sharing. When I share a meal with my friend John, he doesn't give me a bill at the end of it. When I flop at his couch on San Francisco for the weekend as a buddy, I'm not getting a bill. This is renting, which is why it's called short-term rentals. And so you should stop using the word share. And second, Airbnb is in a contract with these people. They have an absolute obligation to perform that contract in good faith. And by not noticing them directly that this is illegal in San Francisco under most circumstances, they're in fact not following that contract in good faith. They should be sued in a class action lawsuit by everyone who signed up by Airbnb in San Francisco. Hint, hint, you lawyers.
All right, thank you for that call. Actually, I'm going to read some more comments about Airbnb. James writes, I don't know where he comes by these facts, but he says, fact, 50% plus of Airbnb listings in San Francisco are tenant listed. Almost all of those violate the rent control requirement to not profiteer on a sublet. Without an amendment of the rent control law, there is no solution at all. Unfortunately, the Board of Supervisors is afraid to touch rent control ordinance because of the intense local politics. So how is the legislation going to help at all? Justin True.
Well, I think, rent control, I think, is a core policy value in San Francisco that, protects people who have lived here for a long time from some of the vicissitudes of our housing market. Right now, we're in a housing crisis. San Francisco always has a tight housing market comparatively. But right now, we're in really probably the worst housing crisis we've seen in decades, even compared to the dot-com boom. And if it wasn't for rent control, the number of San Franciscans who would be displaced from their homes would be, even greater than it is now. And we're doing everything we can in City Hall, from the mayor to the supervisors to the planning department and others, to try to work with community members, tenant advocates, and others to address the housing crisis. But if it wasn't for rent control, I think we'd be in a lot worse shape.
You had mentioned, in fact, a listener writes in asking about requirement for permanent residency. What does that mean? What if somebody comes to town on a temporary assignment, for example, for 3 months, as listener asks?
There is a way to define permanent residency in the code, and we will define that in the ordinance. But if you're here for a couple of months, you're going to be a transient occupant. You're not going to be a permanent resident. So I don't think that one would qualify. But it is, you know, that is one of the discussions, is how we do make sure it is a permanent resident. But and obviously that's one of the issues that we'll work through.
Well, it brings up another issue. In fact, let me go to you on this, Scott Sanchez. This is a tweet from a listener. It says, there are substantial differences between renting a unit full time on Airbnb and doing it twice a year to recoup cost of a vacation.
No, I definitely would agree with that. And I think this is important, where Supervisor Chu has taken the initiative here to look at ways of allowing limited short-term rentals. And one of the issues that's being discussed is how many days over the course of a year can you do that? So is it 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? So, you know, we agree that this is a changing marketplace here. This is something that people do find useful, and as residents, to help them pay and afford the cost of living here in the city. And so if we can find a way legislatively to allow that on a limited basis, you know, we see that as a win-win situation.
And Scott Sanchez, you're on your vacation, I think, aren't you right now?
That is correct, yes.
You're not in San Diego this morning. He's zoning administrator for the planning department in San Francisco. Here's Colin from San Francisco. Good morning.
Good morning. One of the guests mentioned earlier that the violation on our short-term rental ban is actually a misdemeanor. Have there actually been any prosecutions where property owner has actually gone to jail for violation of that ordinance?
Edward Singer shaking his head no here. Yeah.
I am not aware of any violation, of any prosecutorial action being taken against a landlord or a tenant. It's also a crime for a tenant to do this.
Neither am I.
Let me thank you for the call. Right to another caller we go, and that's Jennifer. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Thanks.
I just have two quick points, and then I'll take the responses offline. The first one is that I think people need to remember that people who own buildings, if someone's renting an apartment out through Airbnb and that person who's staying there gets injured on the property, then the owner of the building could be responsible or liable for any medical costs or anything that comes out of that injury. So therefore, putting the landlord in a tough spot. And I think the other thing, too, is that, you know, we do have rent control in San Francisco, and folks, I think, need to remember that when you're doing something like this, above and beyond, is that you're not, as a tenant, if you are allowed to sublease, you're not supposed to be making more money than the landlord is. So if someone has a rent-controlled apartment that's a three-bedroom for $700 a month, and they're renting it out, whether it's on Craigslist for a long-term rental or a short-term rental, they're not supposed to be making more than $700 a month. And if they are, essentially they're stealing from the landlord. So I'll take my responses offline.
Thank you. Those two salient questions, Ed Singer?
I agree with many of the important points that the callers are addressing. The fact that the strangers are coming into these buildings exposes tenants to danger. It exposes landlords to liabilities. The callers have also pointed out that under the rent control ordinance, that both the spirit and the substance of the ordinance prevents tenants from profiting from the benefit of their rent-controlled apartment, and these Airbnb renters are obviously violating that. And to address a point raised by some of our other guests here, some of these Airbnb tenants are taking apartments out of the rental stock. One of the cases that I prosecuted involved a gentleman who lived in Texas, owned a home in Texas, and was married to a woman in Texas, and was simply using an apartment as solely an Airbnb and renting it out through a real estate agent.
You just opened up the fact that you were a former prosecutor, just like that.
Huh? Oh, no. When I say prosecuted a case, I was a prosecutor once. I was also a criminal defense attorney once.
Here's Russ. Russ, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I represent maybe a different group of people. I own my own house, and I built an in-law unit into the house, and it was my expense, and it was never on the market before. I thought of putting it on the market to get a regular tenant, but I've heard so many terrible things about rent control on both sides, and I just didn't want to be part of that. I would rather let the unit sit empty or use it as a home office. and I heard about Airbnb. I started doing that. It worked great. I met some fun people, made some money to pay back the cost I put into it. And I don't really see any problem with that. Worked with the neighbors and put in all the security and little upgrades and dealt with parking and all the details. And so I don't see any problem with using Airbnb that way. And I was wondering if your experts there could comment on
Well, let me go to Scott Satches on this. And Scott, you also might apprise us of just what about homeowners? I'm looking at a Facebook page entry from one of our listeners, Ed, who says, what about enforcement with respect to homeowners who choose to rent or host a home or condo via Airbnb? So far, our focus has been largely on renters.
So under the planning code, regardless of the size of the building or the number of units, it would be a violation to rent out a dwelling unit for less than 30 days. Now, the caller mentioned that it sounded like he had recently added the unit, and it sounds like it was a second unit. He should actually check with the rent board if his concerns related to rent control, because it's possible that that dwelling unit, if it was recently added, may not even be subject to rent control. So you may want to check with the rent board on that. And certainly, you know, as a city, we would prefer to see that used to house someone on a permanent residential basis.
And let me thank the caller. Looking at an email here from Elaine, who says, I've been renting on vacation through VRBO since 2006 and have always been charged local transient lodging taxes. It seems totally disingenuous to me of Airbnb to say it was too complicated for them to figure out how to pay taxes until recently. Let me go to more of your calls, and we'll go to you, Stephen. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, this is a byproduct of disruptive technologies, which we live in the aorta of. And for once, I think this San Francisco city government's doing the right thing. Anybody that signs a lease, any renter or tenant, clearly understands that they have no right to sublet their place. And an aside, I've tried to use Airbnb traveling overseas. It is a complete waste of time, my wife and I's time. It was a disaster. So, to the caller who just called, I kind of understand somebody who owns a home and builds an in-law apartment. I don't think there should be any issue with people renting that out. But anyway, I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, we thank you for your comments. And who would like to respond to them?
Well, I'd like to respond to the idea of taking housing units off the market.
Joe Tabiner.
I think that anybody that is renting out an entire unit needs to think about the social consequences of that, because it's one less housing unit, and we are in a major housing crisis in San Francisco. Rents, we have the highest rents of any city in the nation. Evictions are at their highest level since 2001. We need housing badly, and if someone's renting out on Airbnb to tourists, that's one less house for families.
Well, we are getting some pro-Airbnb comments, so let me read a couple of those, or at least read one of these right now. Wendy writes on Facebook, I've lived in San Francisco for 25 years, lived in this house for 13. I've been renting my house for 6 months. The money is going into our daughter's college fund and goes to upgrade the house. It's an incredible way to make some extra money. I agree with paying the taxes to support the city. We should support but regulate Airbnb worldwide. And yet Terry is writing to us that Airbnb, from his perspective, should be responsible to tenants who get into trouble instead of ask your lawyer. New York sues Airbnb. San Francisco should, too. Tenants should take responsibility, too. They are not being fair to landlords and their neighbors. Airbnb share ideology is good business to itself. And Lori says, as a renter, I cannot help but think that my fellow renters have been screened by the landlord. If a neighbor in my building or apartment complex sublets their apartment, what about my safety? Does their rental insurance cover this activity if there's a fire or other damage to the unit? Can you shed some light on that, Scott Sanchez?
No, in terms of insurance, that would be something that would be in between the property owner or the tenant. So maybe one of the attorneys can better address
that. Yeah, well, it seems likely to go to the attorneys, but in fact, Joe Tabiner, you could shed some light here. I'm just wondering, because if you get a car insurance policy, you can have an occasional driver drive your car, but what about an occasional renter?
Well, landlords are losing their insurance policies because of Airbnb use. We've heard of insurance companies going online, seeing which landlords are doing this and canceling insurance policies because it's too risky for the insurance companies to insure against transient use.
Yeah, which is another point. Yeah, which is why I believe that landlords have a right to prevent this from going on in their buildings. And there's also been this suggestion that tenants aren't aware that they are doing something wrong. But in every case I've been involved with, there has been a written lease which prohibits subletting. And then my experience in dealing with this is I will get a phone call or an email from the tenant saying, I'm not sure, why did you serve this on me? I'm not doing anything wrong. And I will say, I believe you've been using Airbnb, and they will deny it. So it seems to me that based upon that conduct, they realize that they weren't following the law.
This is a listener who wonders, is it illegal to rent out a place part-time in Oakland? Does anybody know the many of these cities have the similar situation.
Yeah, I think this is
throughout the country.
Judson True from Supervisor David Chu's office. One of the things that we've been doing over the last year is looking at what other cities are doing around the country and really around the world as sites like Airbnb and VRBO have multiplied and the use of them has increased so much. And I can't speak specifically to Oakland. I think that quite a few California cities have some restrictions on short-term rentals. And any city where there's a real impact on housing is going to have some restrictions. But they really range the spectrum from forbidding to just outright allowing. And I think that San Francisco has an opportunity once again to lead the way in some rational regulation of an activity that has really been around for a long time but has increased so much because of the internet and the spread of the so-called sharing economy.
Well, good luck to you and Supervisor Chu. I hope you can find the cure.
Yeah, maybe we'll be back when we as we talk about the legislation.
I will welcome you on here to talk about what the remedy is or the cure or whatever way we want to phrase it here. But thank you for being with us. Judson True, again, is a legislative aide for San Francisco Supervisor David Chu, and they've been working on legislation the past year regarding short-term rentals in the city. Let me also thank Edward Singer, real estate attorney with the law firm Zaxson Friedman, who joined us this hour in studio, real estate broker. Thanks for being with us, Ed Singer. And thanks to you, Joe Taberner, managing partner of Taberner Law Center, also with us in studio, tenants' rights lawyer who represents people facing eviction for Airbnb. And thanks to Scott Chanchez, who is with us by phone, zoning administrator with the San Francisco Planning Department, enforces the planning code for housing units. You can continue this discussion online, of course, by going to kqed.org if you'd like to, or on our Facebook page. We remind you that we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated in the evening, 10 to 11. Another hour up ahead, Jeremy Rifkin's going to be joining us in that hour ahead to talk about his new book, The Zero Marginal Cost Society. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.